Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, where she founded and directs the center's Voting Rights and Elections Project, which has protected the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens in recent years. She's authored a number of nationally recognized publications and articles on voting rights and election reform, litigated groundbreaking voting rights lawsuits, testified before both houses of Congress, and in a variety of state legislatures, and provided policy and legislative drafting assistance to federal and state legislators and administrators across the country. Welcome to Background Briefing, Wendy Weiser.
Thank you.
And this extraordinary ruling that came from the Supreme Court today, I'm still trying to get my head around it, because the Chief Justice Roberts praised the Voting Rights Act, said it had really worked, and then proceeded to take away the very mechanism why it worked, at the same time saying this mechanism was unconstitutional without citing what part of the Constitution it violated.
Yeah, it is a shocking decision. I'm still having trouble getting over the shock of a five-justice slim majority sweeping away what has been the most effective protection in American law against voting discrimination, the crowning achievement of the civil rights movement. It is a shocking and sad day in American democracy.
And do you think that the full weight of it will be understood? I mean, the whole purpose of the Voting Rights Act, at least in part, it seemed to me, that it was naming and shaming those states that did terrible things. And there's a history, of course, of 100 years since the slaves were freed, where they were put back in bondage by Jim Crow laws, and their citizenship was denied and delayed in spite of the 14th Amendment. And then the 15th Amendment basically is the foundation that we're talking about here. And it seems to me that the conservative majority is violating the 15th Amendment with this ruling.
Let me explain a little bit of what is lost in this ruling. The court actually acknowledged that voting discrimination is still a problem today, and it acknowledged that Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, the real heart of that crowning landmark law, has been effective in blocking voting discrimination and in bringing about huge progress in political equality in our country. So it acknowledged those things, and it didn't even say that Section 5 is unconstitutional. What it said is another section of the law, the section that named which states are subject to the protections of Section 5, was unconstitutional. So while it purported to uphold that core provision of the Voting Rights Act, it has been rendered inoperative by saying that nobody right now is constitutionally subject to that requirement.
But they didn't cite what part of the Constitution it was violating. I mean, under the 15th Amendment, isn't it the Congress's right and duty to set laws?
Yeah, absolutely. The 15th Amendment expressly gives Congress the authority to pass laws to protect against voting discrimination, to bring about equality in the voting system. That is a direct and express grant of power to Congress. Congress is the central player in that. Certainly the court has a role in protecting against voting discrimination and promoting equality under both the 14th and 15th Amendments, but Congress has been really given paramount authority. And while on the one hand the court recognized that Congress has that authority and can constitutionally act in this realm, and that is a relief, it didn't respect that authority. And it just swept away what Congress did. Congress found by overwhelming bipartisan majorities that the states that it had targeted under the Voting Rights Act were the states where there was the worst problem of discrimination, and that were justified special provisions, special protections, that they get their voting changes looked at and approved by the federal government to make sure that they're not discriminatory before they go into effect. That's what Congress found. It was a near unanimous majorities in both houses of Congress. And the court just swept that away, saying, hey, the formula you used was based on outdated, old data. The court didn't even say that the states were the wrong states, that those states didn't have a bigger voting discrimination problems presently. The court was just concerned that Congress was using an outdated formula to arrive at which states those would be.
Again, I'm speaking with Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, where she founded and directs the center's Voting Rights and Elections Project, which has protected the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens in recent years. And as you pointed out, it was only recently renewed for 25 years, the Voting Rights Act, signed into law by President George W. Bush. I think 98 out of 100 senators voted for it, and then there was an equal and similar majority in the House, an overwhelming majority. So the Congress has spoken. Now, if it's kicked back to this dysfunctional and gridlock Congress, good luck at getting anything changed. I mean, it feels to me like a very cynical ruling where the conservative justices, just as they did in Citizens United, completely radically changed things and damn the consequences. They're not even telling us what the legal underpinning of their decision is, and they're telling us that something has worked, but now we don't need it to work anymore because it's worked. When we know that in the last election cycle, there was a myriad of attempts to suppress voting. And presumably from now on, every one of these voting suppression tricks that have gone on, particularly in the southern states, will go on in spades, surely.
I fear that we're going to see a huge spate of discriminatory voting activity in the states that were previously covered. There is a host of laws and other voting changes that were just recently blocked by Section 5, ones that were recently deterred by Section 5, ones that are waiting in the wings that are now all going to be thrown into question. In Texas, for example, where a three-judge court in D.C. found its voter ID law was actually discriminatory and couldn't be implemented, just announced today, before the ink was even dry on the decision that it was putting in place its voter ID law, the one that was found to be discriminatory. We expect that lots of other settled disputes are going to be thrown into question again. There are going to be battles in states across the country.
So can we just go through a little bit of this for our audience just to get their heads around how radical this ruling is? It's denying, in effect, that we have a problem when we know from the last election we have a problem. We know that thousands and thousands of African Americans, for example, in Florida, stood in lines for 6, 8, 10 hours to vote, determined to exercise their rights. We know that Texas tried to pass voter ID laws that in many ways were smacked of Jim Crow and poll tax. We know that South Carolina tried. We know that now in the legislature in North Carolina, they're passing all kinds of voting restrictions that are just breathtaking in their scope. Can you just sketch out some of this and who the states are, just for us to understand? Because the Citizens United decision basically has changed the entire electoral landscape. Money is just poured in indiscriminately and unchecked and unattributed into our politics. They've changed it radically. I'm suggesting here, which I think is fairly logical, that this ruling is going to have an equally radical effect on our elections because we know what they've been trying to do, and now the very mechanism that was preventing them from doing what they were trying to do is out. So what's to stop them?
We have certainly lost our, most potent tool to fight against discrimination in voting today, and that is a significant loss. And it is happening at a time when it is badly needed, when there was a huge evidence of ongoing voting discrimination in the states. And as you mentioned, there are efforts to pass large-scale laws that make it harder for Americans to vote in lots of states that have been covered by the Voting Rights Act. Section 5 has been a tool to mitigate or block some of those laws. But even more broadly, Section 5 operates every single day in town elections, municipal elections, county elections, school board elections, state elections in covered jurisdictions across the country. And that's where, we're going to see real sweeping impacts. I mean, there are, have been recent efforts to shut out minority candidates from municipal office holding from school board elections. There have been efforts to shut down polling places in minority neighborhoods in jurisdictions across the country. These kinds of slippery changes that pop up and affect one election at a time are going to be really hard to target and fight back against without Section 5.
And how many states are there? I understand that in total there were 26 states, but is it, 15 that have basically been the most egregious and the ones that have to be pre-cleared? I'm just not sure of the figures.
There are 9 states that were before today covered in their entirety by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. There were parts of 6 other states, counties or townships in 6 other states that also had to get their voting changes pre-cleared, checked for discriminatory laws. So that it's at 9 plus parts of 6 more.
That's 15, right?
States. And those are really, have been the worst offenders. And there's nothing in the court's decision that challenges Congress's determination there. There's no those are the worst offenders and the places where problems of voting discrimination have been the worst. And now in all of those states, the millions of Americans won't have those kinds of protections, the most powerful protections we have against voting discrimination. They are not the only protections we have in American law, but it has been the most effective and necessary protection that we have had until today.
So if the Supreme Court, the same majority that ruled on Citizens United, is immune from, are they immune from understanding the results of what they've done in that? And would they therefore be immune from what the results will be from this decision today? Particularly when the Chief Justice says, it's really worked. We've gotten rid of discrimination over the years. And then he turns around to take away the very mechanism that's made it work. So let's not say that the guy is a hypocrite or that he's totally partisan, that he just wants to get rid of the Democratic Party and have Republicans in perpetual rule in this country, which certainly has helped the Citizens United decisions help them in that regard. So assuming that he's not completely cynical, is it possible that given the logical consequences of this ruling that the evidence will be out there fairly soon for all to see? And does it matter to these people? Does it matter what's happened with Citizens United and will happen with this voting rights decision?
It is not clear to me how affected this Supreme Court majority is to public opinion. Citizens United has been one of the most unpopular court decisions in history. Americans have been outraged by it. I suspect that this decision in the Shelby County case will rise to similar levels. That is the bad news. The good news is that as a formal matter, the decision was actually quite narrow. In its impact, it was extraordinarily expansive. It has essentially rendered this core provision of the Voting Rights Act inoperative across the country. But as a formal matter, it acknowledged that voting discrimination still exists. It acknowledged that Congress is still the body that has the power to fix that. It acknowledged that Section 5, the critical mechanism, is still permissible and still good law. And what it narrowly did is just struck down the list of states that Congress found it applied Section 5 to, and punted it back to Congress. So the silver lining is there's something we can do about it. We can call on Congress to immediately restore that core provision of American law, to restore the Voting Rights Act. Congress said it just needs to pass a law using updated criteria. So if Congress updates the criteria, we can get that back in place. I understand that there are a lot of challenges in Congress, but I like to believe that the Voting Rights Act is different. It is special. That Americans, we've all grown up with the understanding of the Voting Rights Act as a critical crowning achievement of the civil rights movement as a core protection in American law, something that we take for granted, the realization of the values of the Declaration of Independence, that we're all created equal. It has such an iconic status in American law and culture. The problem of voting discrimination is still so pervasive that I would like to believe that, you know, we are not going to be able to stand letting it go, and that we're going to call on Congress to step in immediately to put it back in place.
But surely this is an invitation to the kind of cynicism that we've heard from these Southern Republican governors and senators. Just today, in response to this ruling, Senator Johnny Isaacson, a Republican of Georgia, said, "I'm very proud of what the South has done. The modernization, that's the key word, of our voting rights laws. Voting rights must be protected, but it's time for Congress to review the criteria." I mean, everything that they do in terms of voter suppression is in the name of modernizing, of making, getting rid of fraud, even though there's been no evidence presented that fraud is almost negligible, if not non-existent. That is the rubric. It's all about, we need voter IDs, we need to modernize, you know, we need to update. That's the way that the discrimination takes place. This is the modern face of Jim Crow. It's not as crude as it used to be. It's much more subtle, and they're basically saying, you know, we got these outdated laws, and let's just, you know, update them and make it all modern. But we know, but you know what the consequences are. I don't mean to be too upset here, but
a modern American law would still have strong protections against voting discrimination. That is a core and foundational principle on which our democracy rests. And so it is all fine and good to modernize our voting system. We are for that. There are lots of great things we can do. Getting rid of our foundational protections against voting discrimination is not modernization. And if you're taking Georgia, for example, they, you know, can't claim that this is an outdated protection. There have been a number of voting changes that were blocked in recent years. And in fact, this past year alone, a whole bunch of changes that as discriminatory. You know, it is not out of date in Georgia or in, you know, most of the other jurisdictions that have been covered. And the law itself dealt with that issue. If a state actually had a clean bill of health, if it became outdated, if the state no longer had a problem of voting discrimination under the law, it could bail out of coverage of the Voting Rights Act. It can apply once it's had 10 years without voting discrimination to be removed from coverage of the law. So it becomes obsolete on its own terms. It did not require the Supreme Court to throw it out if it was, if a state truly no longer had a problem with voting.
Right, and a number of states have already bailed out.
There's been a huge number of states and other localities that have bailed out that have shown, yes, we have, in fact, gotten past voting discrimination in our jurisdiction. And those states aren't covered. It's the states that still have persistent problems of voting discrimination, that still are outside of the norm, that have this protection in place. You know, and Congress, by overwhelming majorities, agreed that needed to happen. And I understand that there are some members of Congress today who come from some of those states that might have a different view, but nonetheless, it is still the case that most Americans and most members of Congress know that this is still a problem and something that we need to address.
Well, Wendy Weiser, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, where she founded and directs the center's Voting Rights and Elections Project, which has protected the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens in recent years. And she has authored a number of nationally recognized publications and articles on voting rights and election reform, litigated groundbreaking voting rights lawsuits, and testified before both houses of Congress. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with Aziz Haq, professor of law at the University of Chicago, a former clerk at the Supreme Court for Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Too many martyrs and too many deaths. Too many lies, too many empty words were said. Too many times for too many angry men. Oh, let it never be again. Then the the boy became a man, the man became a cause. The cause became the hope for the country and its laws. They tried to burn his home.